Washington, Wednesday, February 18th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, the Obama housing plan and the move towards nationalizing the banks. We'll talk about both huge subjects with David John of the Heritage Foundation. How much good will Obama's plan do, and what's the best way to fix the current mortgage crisis? And would it help for the government to take a bigger stake in more of our banks, and would they ever let go? Also in this edition, keeping track of the stimulus money, we'll talk with Michael Bowman of the American Legislative Exchange Council about why he believes we shouldn't expect much strict oversight over the billions of dollars heading to the various U.S. states. We'll also get his insight into the budget disasters in California and Kansas. Plus, the auto industry, back for more cash. We'll talk with Peter DeLorenzo, author of The United States of Toyota, about why he believes the government should invest billions more in trying to revive the ailing auto industry. And the saga continues. Illinois Senator Roland Burris now under fire to resign from members of both parties in his state, as well as two major newspapers, for admitting that, in fact, he was asked to raise money for Rod Blagojevich before being named the next senator from Illinois. All that, plus Wednesday's headlines, follows our discussion on housing and banks with David John of the Heritage Foundation, and that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is David John, Senior Research Fellow in Domestic and Economic Policy at the Heritage Foundation here in Washington. We want to get his thoughts on two critical economic ideas. Number one, the mortgage relief program outlined by President Obama on Wednesday to the tune of $75 billion in order to help some 9 million American homeowners. We also want to get his thoughts on a growing push by the likes of Alan Greenspan and even some in Congress about potentially nationalizing some or many U.S. banks. And David, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Let's start with the housing plan outlined by the president today. First of all, it's got a $75 billion price tag. It's designed to assist banks in modifying mortgages that folks are having a hard time paying, also assisting those who are having the hard time paying the mortgages. What do you make of the fundamental plan here?
Well, sadly, it's not likely to do what it promises to do. Congress has a habit, and I'm afraid the president's fallen into that, of overpromising. If you recall, last summer, Congress passed a bill that was supposed to help 2 million American families, and it ended up helping about 500. This time, they're talking about 7 to 9 million, and some experts are saying that'll probably be closer to a million. It also has a number of very significant weaknesses. For one thing, it has a mortgage cram down in bankruptcy, which means a bankruptcy court could change the amount you owe on your home, which is likely to raise mortgage costs for everyone for the foreseeable future because of the added risk.
Talk about that a little bit more, David. When bankruptcy courts get involved, just how much of a burden is it to new or even existing homeowners who are playing by the rules?
Well, that's exactly the problem. When bankruptcy courts get involved, or the rest of the Obama program, people who have been playing by the rules, are going to be treated exactly the same as their neighbors who might have mortgaged their house for a swimming pool or a boat or something along that line and then stopped paying promptly. The long-term message that this is sending to future borrowers and our kids is that you don't have to face the consequences of your own action. Now, the mortgage bankruptcy provision raises the risk that the note will not be repaid as you signed it. And financial institutions are going to have to raise the cost of the mortgage to meet that additional risk. And it won't be across the board. It's especially going to hit higher risk individuals, and those are just the ones you mentioned, first-time home buyers and people with moderate incomes. They're going to have to either pay higher down payments or they're going to have higher mortgage interest rates. And either one is going to keep an awful lot of them out of the mortgage market.
We're talking with David John of the Heritage Foundation. And David, is there a better plan that the government can get behind here? I know Republicans during the stimulus debate wanted the bill to focus primarily on the mortgage crisis, since that was the tip of this economic iceberg. They were talking about fixed rate mortgage rates, and they were talking about the government backing that up. I think they wanted around 4%. Is that a good approach, a better approach, or is there a better idea out there?
That's actually as bad an approach as the one the Obama people are talking about. The sad fact is that the mortgage crisis will not end until the price of houses has dropped enough so that the supply of buyers is equal to the number of houses outstanding. And there is nothing the government can do other than to tinker around the edges a bit until that happens by natural means. That's a hard thing to say, and I can understand why a politician would be hesitant to say that sort of thing, but there just really isn't that much that they can do.
Is this actually slowing down the process by which the market would correct itself?
To some extent, yes, because it's artificially propping up some of the housing prices, and that artificial stimulus is only going to last for a brief period of time. The Obama plan, when they talk about helping people reduce interest rates and the like, this is the second part of their plan, which deals with people who already have problem mortgages. That help only lasts about 5 years. So all they're really doing is pushing that problem out into the future.
David, based on your knowledge of this country's economic history or just your assessment of the current economic conditions, how long does it usually take for a market to correct itself?
Well, it varies according to what else is going on. In this case, we can assume that one way or the other, the mortgage markets are going to be facing problems for at least the next year or so, maybe the next year and a half. But it's important to remember that there actually isn't one national mortgage market. It's a whole slew of individual local markets. So, for instance, if I'm a worker in Chicago, I don't have the option of buying a house in Detroit, even if the prices are cheaper there. I live in Chicago, I work in Chicago, I'm limited to that market itself. So the different markets are going to recover at different rates. Some of the ones, like for instance Las Vegas and Los Angeles, will probably be in deep trouble for quite some time. Others are already showing signs of recovery.
Our guest is David John of the Heritage Foundation. And David, let's shift topics now to the issue of the banks. We know that they were the target of the first half of the TARP money. And although we don't know a lot of details on the second half of the bailout funds, it appears that they'll be getting a decent share of those as well. Now we're hearing from folks like Alan Greenspan, the one-time venerable chairman of the Fed, and now also some lawmakers, Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina for one, talking about at least partial nationalizing of the banks. What exactly are they referring to when they say that?
Well, what they're saying is that the U.S. government would provide weak banks with enough bank capital to remain in business. And in return for that, the government would receive warrants for common stock. And as we've seen in many other countries, it's estimated that in at least some of those banks, the government ownership of the stock would be equal to maybe 80%, 85%, or even more of the bank's capital.
So how much intervention then overall does Uncle Sam get once that relationship exists?
Well, that's the scary thing. If you talk to people within the Treasury Department, they say that what would happen would be that private management would continue to manage it. On the other hand, if you talk to people in Congress, in particular the Democrats in the House Banking Committee, they start to talk about setting quotas for lending and make sure they lend to the right people and all sorts of micromanagement. And that is likely to cause severe problems, and that simply means that the taxpayers would be on the hook for yet more money.
President Obama has not committed to that idea, although he says if it does happen, he'd like to follow what he calls the Swedish model. What's he referring to?
Well, in the 1990s, Sweden's major banks overextended themselves and essentially failed. The government took them over, and over a period of time, the government recapitalized them and then sold them into private business. That would be fine if we were Sweden, but the problem is we don't have five or six banks in our country. We've got several thousand banks, and it would be a much harder process to do. Also, the Swedish government was very good about keeping their hands out of the bank's business decisions, and we have not seen any signs at this point that Congress is willing to do that.
David, we know that once government involves itself in a different aspect of our economy, there's often a reluctance to ever let go. So if we were to allow even a partial movement in this direction, how permanent might it end up being?
Well, we don't know for sure, but I think that there is an argument to be made that banks and other financial institutions would be converted into essentially utilities that have very limited abilities to innovate and a very limited product line. And that's very scary because consumers benefit a great deal from the innovation we see in the financial services industry.
Yeah, about 90 seconds left here with David John of the Heritage Foundation. And David, what would be your recommendation in terms of keeping the banks or making the banks solvent and doing so perhaps in a more market-based way?
Well, to my mind, what we have got to do is to keep the banks that are in the process of failing open until they can be quietly and orderly resolved. And that's going to take some time. It's not an easy thing when you're talking about some of the largest banks in the country and the confidence level that their failure would undermine. So there's no simple solution to this. It's a matter of recognizing the problem and facing up to what we're going to have to do eventually.
And David, before we let you go, most of these moves, including the recently passed stimulus plan, seem to follow the logic of, well, we have to do something. How far do you fear that theory could go?
Well, I figure there's no end to that theory. Congress has got an idea that any problem that comes along, from the banking crisis to steroid in baseball players, requires a congressional response. So it doesn't matter if it makes a whole lot of sense. They're going to do it anyway.
And so we'll keep our eyes open. I know you will. David, thanks very much for your time today and helping us better understand some complicated economic issues that we're dealing with here.
Oh, it was fun. Thanks a lot.
David John is a senior research fellow in domestic and economic policy at the Heritage Foundation here in Washington. Still ahead on the program, we'll take a closer look at the controversy surrounding Roland Burris, the man who replaced Barack Obama in the U.S. Senate. And we'll examine just how closely the government will provide oversight for the money the states are getting from the recently signed economic stimulus plan. But the news is next. This is Dateline Washington.